there are three vocalizations specifically associated with egg laying. So we need to figure out what those are. And that's been well known in chickens as well. There's an egg song, it's called. But what is this telling the other ducks, right? Is this saying, stay the hell out of my nest box while I lay this egg? Or is it alerting the other birds that it's time to lay eggs? You know, is there a dominance hierarchy where one is telling the others, okay, start coming over to the nest boxes? So there's a lot to do.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. To give your birds optimal gut health and performance, trust Poultry Star from DSM Firmenich, the ideal blend of probiotics and prebiotics for your flock. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
This is Phil Stair with the Poultry Podcast presented by Wisenetics. And we got Dr. Greg Fraley here from Purdue University. And Greg, we got to talk a little while ago about visualizations. Now we're going to talk about vocalizations. So Greg, if you would introduce yourself to the listeners and let's get going.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Phil. I'm Dr. Greg Fraley. I was hired at Purdue in 2020 as the Terry and Sandra Tucker Endowed Chair of Poultry Science. And I'm originally from Baltimore City. And growing up, never even thought about farm animals until I turned 15 and the family moved out to a more rural area. And once we got there, I realized that I had a choice of either working at a McDonald's or working on farms. And so that was a pretty easy decision for me. So I started getting experience with dairy cows, beef cows, and lots of poultry. And really kind of fell in love with it and wanted to be a veterinarian. But then I started shadowing veterinarians and had a great time doing that. But I really learned a lot about myself, about things that I just can't deal with. And one of the things I can't deal with is some of the really horrible things people do to their pets. That didn't work out for me, but I started undergraduate as an animal science major at University of Maryland, College Park, and was still kind of exploring ideas of what I could do with animals, but then took my very first physiology course with Dr. Brenda Mills, and she was just an absolutely fantastic teacher, and I would go to her office hours every week just to talk about physiology and learn more, and wound up taking every single physiology course I could find at the University of Maryland, which ended with an avian physiology course taught by Wayne Kenzel, and absolutely just loved it. And Dr. Kenzel ultimately invited me as an undergraduate to do research in his lab. So I did that, and then he ultimately offered me a graduate position. And so that just seemed like the way to go. And my graduate work, my master's was in avian physiology through the poultry science department, which was there at the time. And then I wanted to expand my education, so I moved to the other side of the country, to Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, where I did a PhD in neuroscience. And there I kind of developed the expertise, always studying how feeding and reproduction systems of the brain work together, because there's a very close ties, that they're parallel neural systems. And so I finished that degree in neuroscience, and by training, I'm what's called a behavioral neuroendocrinologist. So that means I study how environmental changes, this can be in a barn or management changes, or climate changes, or physiological changes, their internal environment, how that affects brain pathways that regulate feeding and reproduction, ultimately just growth and development. And so I've been doing that, and brain pathways that affect certain behaviors, so feeding behaviors, reproductive behaviors, and others. And about 10 years ago, as I got working more and more with the duck industry specifically, I learned that everything I was doing, no matter what I was measuring or how we were experimenting with birds, it always seemed to impact their welfare. And so decided at the time that I wanted to learn more about the neurobiology of welfare. So that is a lot what we're doing now. We still do some growth and development work, but a lot of my students have been working with what is the biological basis, what's the neurobiological basis of welfare or of a positive or negative affective state. And so that's where a lot of where we're going. And we're exploring more areas of how do we determine what a bird's mood is, both not just in terms of what's going on inside their brain, but with behaviors as well.
Are you looking for effective cleaning and disinfection solutions for your farm or hatchery? Look no further than Sidlines, an Ecolab company. Our AV Prime program offers advanced hygiene solutions that ensure thorough cleaning and disinfection of facilities and drinking water solutions. With products like Kinosan, Virucid, and our newest addition, Sid15X, you can reduce pathogens, improve animal health, and boost productivity. Trust Sidlines, an Ecolab company, for cleaner, healthier, and more effective poultry production.
I guess that's the next question, Greg. That's great. Definitely have a background to understand the animals, but obviously you can't be the duck. So right. How do you listen to a duck? What's a duck tell you? teach us some duck lingo.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, throughout my career, I have spent as much time as I can in commercial barns because I just like watching ducks be ducks. And talking to the farmers, the growers, to see what kind of observations they have, because we really learn a lot of important information by just talking to the people who work with the ducks every day and spending time in the barns. And one of the things, you know, for years I noticed that as I was walking around the barns, I would hear all kinds of different vocalizations. Everybody thinks a duck goes quack. Well, they do, but there's a lot of different quacks. There's one I call it a chihuahua sound and you know, just all kinds of different things. And I just had in the back of my mind, what can I do with this? Is there a way that we can start ascertaining what these different vocalizations mean? Well, after I got to Purdue, I, again, met up with someone over in biological sciences, Dr. Jeff Lucas, who does this. This is what he does. He's an environmental physiologist. And again, the folks, physiologists, scientists working with wild birds have been doing this for 100 years. And they've got the techniques down exactly how you classify vocalizations. And so along with a new student, Jenna Schober, who's now my postdoc, she set off on this project, or we set off on this project, the first step was to learn what is the complete repertoire of vocalizations that a bird makes. And to do this, we developed what are called anechoic chambers. And it's just what it sounds like. You sit in it and there's no echoes because we want to get pure vocalizations. We want the pure sound so we can analyze the sonography to classify different vocalizations. And we put ducks in these chambers individually, in pairs, all kinds of different social groups, males and females together. We then put objects in with them to make them happy. They really like playing with water. That makes them happy. So we gave them a little water cup to dip their heads in. We also wanted to see the scary side of things because we want to know what warning vocalizations sound like. And so Jenna got a little remote control robot that she put in there as a T-Rex robot. And it would even go at them to try to creep them out. And for the record, the ducks couldn't have cared less. And it turned out the scariest thing that we could put in the anechoic chamber with a duck was an undergrad. And so that elicited a whole lot of vocalizations. And so Jenna, along with Dr. Lucas over in biology, they spent a good year tearing down these vocalizations to a single vocalization, analyzing the sonograms, grouping them into different types of vocalizations. And what we found is that ducks have about 19 very distinctly different types of quacks. And what is absolutely one of my favorite observations that is of those 19 vocalizations, the females, the hens, make about 16 of them, and the drakes only about 3 or 4. And if you put a drake in or two drakes in into a chamber together, they just sit there and stare at each other and don't say anything. Add in one girl and they're just talking all over the place.
That's quite anthropomorphic there, Greg.
Yeah, a little bit of anthropomorphism there, but hey, when it works, it works. So essentially, Jenna now has what we call a Rosetta Stone of duck quacks. And the next step is saying, okay, what do these different vocalizations mean to the ducks? And so our first step that Jenna's already published, she's published the repertoire, and this next step is out also, is we hook the birds up to a physiological monitor, so to measure heart rate, blood pressure, respiratory rate, and then we would, it's a very complicated design, but we would essentially play back pure vocalizations to the birds to see how it would increase or decrease autonomic responses. And so the first part of that study, and that was a lot of fun to learn how to do that. Our first inclination was to get, those straps that runners wear to measure heart rate. We got those. We bought every single one that we could find on the market, and they work great for runners. But when you have a bird with a heart rate of 400, 500, 600 beats per minute, they tend to break down a little bit. They can't handle it. And really funny story, we had one that was Bluetooth right to our phones, and the app immediately started calling 911. We're like, no. And we ripped it off and smashed it on the floor. Like, please don't show up. Don't have an ambulance show up. But we eventually did find a veterinary based monitor that could handle it. And so very interesting. We found that there are definitely sounds, vocalizations that increase their autonomic response. So things like heart rate. So we are taking these as, these are warning signs. These are stressors. This is a duck saying, I'm not happy. And the other ducks are responding to that, right? So if one duck over here is unhappy, then others are responding saying, oh, maybe I should be unhappy too, or I should be more aware. We also have some calls, vocalizations that are calming to them, right? It reduces heart rate. It physiologically looks like it's calming them down. We also, with the hens, and this is something we need to explore way more, there are three vocalizations specifically associated with egg laying. And so we need to figure out what those are. And that's been well known in chickens as well. There's an egg song, it's called. But what is this telling the other ducks, right? Is this saying, stay the hell out of my nest box while I lay this egg? Or is it alerting the other birds that it's time to lay eggs? You know, is there a dominance hierarchy where one is telling the others, okay, start coming over to the nest boxes? There's a lot to do. And the obvious question here is, okay, who the hell cares, right? What ducks are saying to each other. And so we are, Jenna Schober, my postdoc, Jeff Lucas over in biology, and I have teamed up with a bunch of engineers at Georgia Tech who have a lot of expertise in working with poultry. And we are developing, and this is about to be submitted for publication, we are developing an AI to monitor these vocalizations. So if we can monitor these vocalizations, because everybody wants a non-invasive measure of welfare, right? We can go in and draw blood and do all kinds of things to see if the ducks are happy or not, or chickens or whatever. But what's the non-invasive one? And what we know from the wild bird literature, the birds always know when they're unhappy, and they are always telling their friends that they're unhappy. Okay, and extremely well established in wild birds. So we are developing this to say, okay, if it starts getting too hot in a barn, and we need to lower curtains or turn on the ventilation fans or something, well, instead of waiting 3 or 4 days to realize that's happening, and we only know it because egg production dropped, If we know they're unhappy right now, we can go into the barn and investigate this and be more proactive about maintaining environmental conditions in the barn rather than reactive, which everything now is all being reactive.
I think this is part of the smart houses. I've heard this in relation to chickens, you know, listening, having some measures there. And then when things change, when the vocalizations change, there's a time to at least check into what's not right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are doing this with broilers as well. We're taking a similar approach. And we're still a long way from making our chicken Rosetta Stone. But one of the things that we realize is how much these vocalizations change with age. I mean, every week that repertoire of what they're saying changes. And we think that the chickens have a much more complex vocal repertoire than ducks. That's what we're thinking right now. We haven't proved that yet, but that's where the data is taking us. So again, you know, if we can learn, you know, if maybe there's a little bit too much ammonia over in that corner of the barn, well, those birds know it, and they're going to tell their other friends that there's something wrong that they don't like with this area of the barn. So we can get even more micromanagement if we can place enough microphones in a barn to be able to do distinct areas. So, and there another thing we're actually also thinking about and have started, Jenna has started this, is using these vocalizations as almost a type of auditory enrichment. So when we have to walk into a barn and vaccinate, you know, the ducks down or chickens down at one end of the barn, when we start catching them and then vaccinating them, they're unhappy and they're vocalizing and they're making the birds at the other end unhappy. What if we can play more calming, soothing vocalizations back to just maybe damp that down a little bit and keep them a little bit calmer?
Yeah, that sounds like a really good application, because definitely I've seen that when you're particularly vaccinating, you know, having to pick up in a breeding house pullets and inject them with a vaccine. The ones that are getting injected are definitely talking, those that aren't being vaccinated.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And by the time you get down to the other end of the house, it's a lot harder to catch everybody.
That's right. Yeah, I would think it would be a lot of applications.
Greater probability of them hurting themselves because they're trying to run away, you know, depending on the housing type.
So you're working with ducks, and I wouldn't say you have your Rosetta Stone complete, but it sounds like it's much further down the line. The chickens are next. You have turkeys online or?
No. I'll just say no to turkeys. I'm not saying no to turkeys, but no, we haven't made plans for that. I mean, it literally took Jenna 4 years to come up with this Rosetta Stone for ducks. And it's going to be even harder with the chickens because we think that they're more complex. So one step at a time. One step at a time.
Maybe back up to an earlier comment, you always want to know, what can we do today? You know, this research sounds very intriguing and seems to be applicable, and definitely AI is coming, or artificial intelligence, not the disease, you know.
Yeah, right.
Appreciate that. But until then, you know, we have caretakers, we have humans, supposed to be, you know, animal husbandry, taking care of the animals. And you made a comment earlier on yourself, you like to go in the barn and sit and watch and talk to the growers that do the same, that are in there every day watching, you know, and they'll know, the growers will know a difference in behavior. You know, if they were cleaning up their feed in such a time yesterday and they're not today, well, that's an indication that something's changed, not right. So I guess maybe you want to address that interim, you know, with vocalizations, what can a poultry worker or a farmer, what could they do today based upon what you know with vocalizations?
Well, we can start definitely telling them what vocalizations, and I think the farmers mostly know this, right? They know when their birds are unhappy, and they know what sounds are making them unhappy. So I'd say a recommendation, and I've mentioned this to some of the duck growers, the farmers, that, you know, they can hear them in their house at night. I was like, well, have you ever thought going out, you know, and look and see what's upsetting them? And of course, many of them do. Most of them do. So that is really, so, you know, listen to your birds, pay attention to what the birds are telling you. Even if we don't understand what the language is yet, we know when they're unhappy, right? I mean, when you get 15,000 ducks, I'm like, bah, 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 right? I mean, something's going on. Something's not quite right. And same thing with broilers, and actually have a pretty awesome project that I'm starting with Dr. Shauna Weimer down at University of Arkansas, who's just absolutely brilliant ethologist. And we're looking at how vocalizations occur in broilers and broiler breeders associated with isolation. We're just getting started on it. So essentially, again, learning what when the birds are stressed, and we know if we put them in isolation, right? That's a very typical welfarist test. They talk, and they talk a lot. But what are they actually saying to us? And so that's something in conjunction with Jenna's work with developing the chicken repertoire. That's another project going on. So essentially addressing that very question. So, you know, if the chickens make one type of clucking noise that we know means they're upset, but means the temperature is wrong, then that's one thing. Or if they're making a different type of clucking noise because a couple of starlings got into the barn, that can just help guide us to look for what's upsetting the birds.
I think you had it hit the nail on the head on that one. A change in vocalization would be an indication to look for a stimulus to cause a change.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. why did they all of a sudden go from quiet to loud or loud to quiet? And I've said myself, walking through a chicken house, it should be a happy chatter.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be totally quiet, nor should it be, you know, loud that you can't endure walking through it. It should be just a little low conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're saying, but they seem to be happy when
they're doing that. Yeah, yeah. And that's an important point, too, is, we always have cameras and such in our barns here on campus, right? So we're always monitoring. And you're right. When they go quiet, that's telling us something completely different, too, because unless they're sleeping, right, they're always, you know, just chattering away at each other.
Evonik Animal Nutrition is committed to ensure food security and safety while reducing the ecological footprint of animal farming. Its products and services use evidence-based solutions that seek to promote animal welfare and reduce reliance on natural resources. All this is underpinned by long-standing industry partnerships and deep customer understanding. Evonik's focus on efficiency, sustainable, healthy nutrition, and collaborations with livestock farming partners creates value for customers and consumers.
I'd like to go back and address a little bit about ducks. You said, what makes a duck happy? You know, and one of the things we talk about, you know, ducks are, you know, waterfowl. And does water make a duck happy? You said they like a bowl of water dipped their head in. Is that key to duck happiness? Is there other keys to duck happiness?
And that is one of the biggest controversies around the world right now. It's something I've also, and Jenna, actually, as a PhD student, she and I have been working on this for years. So let me paint some broad pictures. Ducks are waterfowl. Do they want water? Yes, of course they do. Does that mean they need water? That I don't know. So I have done many studies over the years looking at very European Union-like requirements for water troughs that are prescribed, right? They have to use them. And we did some of that, and it really gets disgusting, right? I mean, those birds climb in it. Ducks eat a pretty high protein feed that falls into the water. Then they poop in it, depositing bacteria. And within minutes, that water is just absolutely disgusting. Within minutes of cleaning out and disinfecting it, it's gross. And the ducks are dirtier. You know, feathers are a very important commodity for ducks, right? For clothing and bedding materials and whatnot. And so having dirty feathers loses money. And we also see increase in mortality with the open waters. It just creates a bacterial environment, laden environment. But there are all the other types called semi-open water. So it's what I was describing, these cups that they can dip their heads into, but they can't get in and poop in it. And they definitely have some benefits. But we also, in our studies, also see that some of the birds will start resource guarding them. So they like them so much, they will literally just march around it and peck at other birds that come by. So there's a lot of work to be done. There's a possibility. We've also done the bacterial counts and microbiome studies associated with these, and it still does really increase bacteria. And there's a concept in welfare science called wet preening, and it's the birds actually using the water to preen themselves. And I will state for the record, you will never see that phrase in any ornithological literature ever. Birds preen. If they have water, all birds will preen with water. I've seen vultures, turkey vultures, swimming and bathing in Lake Erie. But the open water systems does increase the possibility of their wet preening. So I do admit that. Whether or not that's necessary, and I have been in thousands of duck barns that do not have open water systems, that have just the standard nipple lines. And if those nipple lines are managed correctly, which they almost always are, I have seen literally millions of just beautifully, perfectly preened ducks. So we can't say that they can't do their natural preening behaviors with water lines. That's just not right. Do the semi-open water system or water troughs make them probably happier if we want to be anthropomorphic? I've got to admit, yes, they love it. Is that best for them?
That's a conundrum, isn't it? Now, I think even with, you know, if we anthropomorphize, even your own experience growing up in Baltimore, moving to the country, you know, if you're in the urban environment, you can't do everything you could do out if you're in the country. And for the betterment of society, you know, there's things you shouldn't do in urban areas that you can do in a rural area. And so when you're in a highly dense population, you really can't do all those things that maybe you want to do. But that's a whole other ethics question and all that. But we're asking, like you said, we're listening to the animal. What do they have to do? So Dr. Greg Fradley with Purdue University, this has been fun chat, learning more about another commodity. Poultry Podcast by Wisenetics really appreciates the time that you've offered and the work you're doing, sharing that with a larger audience, and looking forward to more results and how we can apply this.
Great. Thank you so much, Phil. This has been fun.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Evonik. We are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is Jeffo's engagement. Strong bird performance starts with a healthy environment. Healthy environments start with Jones Hamilton. Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to dig deeper into the poultry health challenges you face. By gathering scientific evidence, they identify the most effective combinations of natural ingredients that improve animal health. Visit naturalbiologics.com/poultry to see the newest research in both turkeys and chickens.
All right, Greg, we'll got three more questions for you. This one will tag on this one.
Okay.
This is a fun questions. They'll sometimes include. The first is a book or resource that's impacted you the most or used the most in your professional life.
That's easy. P.D. Sturkey's Avian Physiology.
Oh, there you go.
That's been around for decades. It is my absolute go-to Bible for everything. When I want to look at, I need to understand something about avian physiology that I don't have off the top of my head, that's where I go. Absolutely huge resource. It's been around for decades. I still have my original one that was given to me by Wayne Kenzel as a president when I joined his lab. And Colin Skaines took over the editorial role after we lost Dr. Sturkey. And so there are new additions around as well. And they're all great.
All right. Second question is like that. What outside just book or material, something not professional that just you have interest in, that you do on your own time, something that helps you along? Or
so one of the things that I do is my wife and I are both very avid birders, and so we spend at least one day a weekend during spring and fall, and actually the end of this week, we're going up to Canada to a very hot migration point where we'll see a couple hundred species of birds. But, you know, of course, we keep lists of them. But I think the most important thing that I do is just sit and watch them. Right? Watch what, you know, and you know, everybody wants to see the cool birds. And of course, we see a lot of the cool rare birds. But I love watching mallards and just seeing what are they doing? What are they doing when they're on the water? What are they doing when they're not on the water? And turkeys, wild turkeys, just love watching them. And so just learning about the wild birds being wild birds.
And then the third question is more for, I guess you probably tell your students, but what's it take to be successful from your perspective?
You've got to put in a lot of effort. To be a successful scientist is not a 40-hour-a-week job, unfortunately. You've got to be able to put in the time. You've got to spend time with your animals. It concerns me when I see poultry scientists who don't ever go into barns, right? Commercial barns or otherwise. You've got to be diligent and always look for what's next. Past years said that serendipity favored the prepared mind. So, again, my student Jenna just ran a study that overall didn't show us much interesting results, but we had a behavior pattern pop up. And so she recognized it. She recognized that this was an unusual behavior and we should look at it. And so we're doing that. So chance favors the prepared mind. That's the phrase.
Okay. Yes.
Always do more.
Yeah.
And at the same time, developing that work-life balance. And that's the challenge.
It helps, too, if your spouse or your significant other enjoys the same things, which y'all birding, it sounds like it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.